And now we get to politics. John McCain puts a new spin on the summer of love. The Democratic National Convention moves outside, and an Iranian missile test will test the mettle of both candidates. It's time for our weekly visit with the political junkie.
There you go again.
You do that, when I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
Although we weren't able to shatter that highest, hardest glass ceiling this time, thanks to you, it's got about 18 million cracks in it.
But I'm the decider.
It's been a busy week in politics. NPR's political editor and our political junkie, Ken Rudin, joins us here, as he does every week, to take your questions. Good to have you with us, Ken.
Ted, I think this is going to be a great boost for your career doing this.
I sincerely hope so. I've been looking to become somebody's sidekick for a long time, Ken. I understand you have a trivia question for us.
Well, we do. Jesse Helms, the 30-year senator from North Carolina, died on the 4th of July. Now, in this year of Barack Obama being the Democratic nominee, it's kind of interesting, the little dichotomy there, the fact that Jesse Helms spent so much of his career on race and racial issues. Anyway, his last campaign, he ran against Harvey Gantt. He ran against Harvey Gantt, who was hoping to become the first African-American senator from the South, but he was not the first candidate to run from the South for the Senate. Who was the first black candidate from the South who ran for the Senate?
I've got the answer here, but I would never have known this. Anyway, if you think you know the answer, give us a call. Our number is 800-989-8255. If you have a question about the campaign, you can call us on that same number, 800-989-8255, and you can join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Do we have any calls yet? Any smart people out there who know the answer? Nobody knows the answer. You see, Rudin, sometimes you can outsmart yourself.
I make up a lot of the questions.
You make up these questions. You may as well make up the answer. What's the answer? Who was the first African-American candidate for Senate from
the South?
From the South period or from South Carolina?
From the South period.
All right.
Some calls may be coming in. So that's what I've been told.
Is that what you've been
told? That's what I've been told.
They're not talking to me, Ken. I'm glad that somebody thinks he or she has the answer. Go ahead. If somebody's out there who thinks they have the answer, what's your answer? Go ahead. Chapel Hill. Jesse?
Yes. Hiram Revel.
Who is that? Well,
that's probably different, Jesse,
not,
I assume.
It's not the answer.
Jesse Helms. No, that wasn't Jesse Helms.
Yeah, well, it wasn't Jesse Helms. No. Ken, I think, well, actually, we have another. Gail here in Ann Arbor, Michigan, thinks she has the answer. Gail, go ahead.
Hello?
Hello, Gail, go ahead.
Well, I'm not sure, but I think the answer might be Julian Young.
Julian Young.
Well, she may be
she is. She's confusing Julian Bond and Andrew Young.
I think Julian Young was her illegitimate child.
Well,
during that
day. Let's put it this way: knowing that both of them were such accomplished politicians, had there been a Julian Young,
would have swept the South.
Would have swept the South.
Exactly,
but
right.
No, it wasn't Julian. It wasn't Julian and Michael in Boise, Idaho. And then we're going to stop this silly game, and you're going to tell us what the answer
right,
is.
Maybe Michael can save us.
Michael, help.
Hi. If you're talking post-Reconstruction, Hiram Rebel.
That is correct.
First, cool.
Post-Reconstruction, Mike. And the first one in the modern era was Maurice Dawkins, who ran against Chuck Robb in Virginia in 1988.
Excellent. All right, so now can we move on to questions that people actually care about, Ken?
Oh.
Here. There was a big announcement from the Democratic National Committee this week. Senator Barack Obama will accept the Democratic nomination for president at Mile High Stadium in Denver, Colorado, in front of a freezing crowd of 75,000 supporters. It could snow, you know, in late August in Denver, Colorado.
Well, things have look. The next time, if it's going to snow, the next thing you say, we'll have a black nominee for president. I mean, that won't happen either. Well, actually, we do have a black nominee for president.
We do,
and maybe it could snow.
Why is he doing this?
First of all, the original convention is in Denver at the Pepsi Center, which holds 26,000 people. Barack Obama has shown that he can attract a humongous crowd. In Portland, Oregon, not too long ago, prior to the May primary there, he drew 75,000 people at a rally in Portland. So the Democrats know that there are a lot of people who want to see him. The venue at the Pepsi Center is too small, so the football stadium where the Denver Broncos play can hold 76,000. And so for the last day, August 28th, which is the 45th anniversary of Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, Barack Obama will give his acceptance speech at the football stadium. This is not unprecedented.
I was going to say, it's not the first time it's happened.
John F. Kennedy did it, same thing in 1960. He was at the Los Angeles Sports Arena, and he gave his acceptance speech at the L.A. Coliseum on the final day of the 60 convention.
Is Senator Obama throwing down the gauntlet here to his Republican rival? I mean, what does John McCain do to match that? Or does he?
Well, actually, he did. He said, look, you know, what John McCain offers is not words and rhetoric, but action. As a matter of fact, he has a new ad up on saying those exact words, saying that, you know, if you want hope and you want rhetoric, that's fine. But if you want somebody who's, you know, put his life on the line and has a career of getting things accomplished, you know, then you'll take me. But obviously, he's not going to try to top what Barack Obama does in Denver.
You know, there's a big news story today, Ken, having to do with Iran. The Iranian Revolutionary Guard launched 9 missiles. They claim they have a missile capable of reaching Israel, even of reaching some U.S. territory.
1,250 miles.
1,250 miles. And you know, here we are in the middle of an election campaign, and the temptation when American machoism is challenged during an election campaign is to try and out-macho the next guy. That could be dangerous. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, it is dangerous, especially the Democratic Party knows that they've been out-macho-ized, if that's a word, by the Republicans on national security and foreign policy in the past. And certainly in 2004, that's what happened to John Kerry, who, for all his service, you know, service records in Vietnam, he was still seen, portrayed, I should say, as weak on foreign policy, weak on national security. So the Democrats obviously do have that problem. John McCain, of course, has a resume, having been, you know, shot down and POW and long career in Congress on defense issues. He's not worried about that, but the Democrats seem to. But anyway, Barack Obama today did not seem to respond with machoism. He talked about, again, the need for diplomacy and sanctions, which is not far different than what John McCain said today.
Well, actually, the interesting thing is, in a sense, the Bush administration is providing cover because they're not thumping their chests either. They're talking about the need for diplomacy, which is smart and allows both the candidates not to have to feel that they've got to get out there and see if they can out-militarize one another.
Well, even as John McCain, you know, he had that unfortunate or that somewhat joke about the bomb Iran, that comment not too long ago.
Right.
Barack Obama said today that, look, you know, Iran wouldn't be as strong as it is today had the Bush administration not sent troops into Iraq, because that has made Iran the powerhouse it is today. And so for every response the Republicans and McCain say about, you know, what to do about Iran, Barack Obama indicates that it's our Iraq policy that's put Iran on the map the way it is now.
I think we've got a question here that's roughly on the subject that we're on right now. Nicholas in Detroit, can you hear me?
Hi.
Go right ahead.
I was just reading, and I don't know how many people are familiar with this story, but on Monday and Tuesday, the Prime Minister of Iraq was talking about how he wanted a timetable for the withdrawal of American troops, but the White House keeps on insisting that they don't want a timetable. And I just want to know, first we were talking about how we were going to stay there because the Iraqi government wants us. Now the Iraqi government doesn't want us there, and we still want to stay there without, you know, giving them a timetable.
Seems awkward, doesn't it?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And we keep giving excuses about why we should stay there. And should John McCain become president in January, is he going to stay there even though the people don't want us there, the government doesn't want us there, and the American people don't want us there?
And perhaps let's expand it out, because over the past few days there's been some ambiguity as to where Senator Obama stands on this issue. Ken?
Well, he says, of course, he has not changed his position, but of course, when he was running for the Democratic nomination against Hillary Clinton, he said that All troops would be gone by within 16 months of him becoming president. Now he says, although he said this all along, that when he goes to Iraq, which is presumably in the next couple of months, he will decide, he will talk to the commanders on the ground and see what the situation is. But he still says that John McCain will continue the war and he will end it. So that's the one difference, he says.
I want to warn folks here that I'm going to go to that John Edwards soundbite in a moment, because there was more speculation about possible running mates for Senator Obama and Senator McCain. And on this program yesterday, former North Carolina senator and former candidate for the Democratic nomination, John Edwards, said he wouldn't say no to an offer from his one-time opponent. Let's listen to that.
I would do anything that I felt I could do to serve this country. But I think it's a huge presumption for me or anybody else to suggest what Senator Obama may decide. To answer your question directly, I don't expect to be asked. I have no expectation about it at all. I will, anything that Senator Obama asks me to do, including this, including campaigning for him, I intend to do, because I intend to take seriously, because mm-hmm. what I intend to do is everything in my power, use everything in my power to make sure that he's the next president.
Sure sounds like he's running to me.
I think the actual answer was, please, please pick me.
Yes.
And, you know, and it's on you. I mean, there are some people who say that they do not want it. Jim Webb, the senator from Virginia, the first-term senator from Virginia, former Navy secretary under President Reagan, obviously had a lot of credentials, foreign policy, military credentials, but he took himself out of the running, as did Mark Warner, who's running for the Senate from Virginia, as did Ted Strickland, the governor from Ohio. But you know something? Whereas John Edwards did not make sense 4 years ago because John Kerry was not going to make any inroads in the South, Barack Obama does have the ability to speak Southern, certainly in Virginia, North Carolina, Georgia, where there's large African-American population. And perhaps while John Edwards did not make sense 4 years ago, he might make sense this time.
So you think he might actually pick him? Is he one of the top 3 to 5?
He's on my short list, and my short list is now up to 35 names. It's an extremely short list.
Well, your short list doesn't count anyway. You're listening to, you're listening to Talk of the Nation, in case you're wondering. And who generates that? Oh, yes, NPR News. I'm here with Ken Rudin, our political junkie. And Ken, what do we need to be talking about? I've got James here. Oh yes, a good question, James. Go ahead, give it to us.
Yes, thank you for taking my question. I'm James Bothwell from Fairfax, Virginia. My question is about the likely impact of the other candidates, Bob Barr, the Libertarian, and Ralph Nader. Are they likely to have any real impact on the presidential race this year?
That's a very good question. Right now, Ralph Nader is on the ballot in about 10 states. He certainly wants to make more of an impact than just the 10 states. Bob Barr, being the nominee of the Libertarian Party, may have been up to 50, anywhere between 45 and 50 states. And, of course, if you're a conservative Republican and you're not enamored of John McCain, Bob Barr theoretically could be an outlet for some of that frustration. Bob Barr is very conservative. He's also been a strong critic of President Bush on privacy issues, civil liberty issues. So, again, he has the capacity to do, theoretically, what Ralph Nader did to Al Gore in 2000, siphon up enough votes in certain states that could hurt John McCain.
Like Georgia, for example.
Exactly, and Georgia is one of the places where he's making a big effort.
All right, phone call. Steve, San Antonio, go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to share my comment about Senator Obama. I'm very concerned about his foreign policy. He's really using the same kind of rhetoric right now against Iran as George W. Bush, and I'm a little worried about that, because I think if we did attack Iran, that would definitely pull the United States into third world country status, because it wouldn't be tenable. And I think that's something that Americans really need to realize. Ever since World War II, political parties have changed, candidates have changed, but it seems like foreign policy never, ever changes. And I think people voting for Obama, I think people supporting him are a little misguided in thinking he's even going to take us out of Iraq, because you know, the fact is foreign policy is determined on a much higher scale than the presidency.
Steve, I think we kind of got the thrust of your comment and where you're coming from. Ken, your response.
Well, there are a lot of people I've seen and read a lot of blogs over the last couple of days, especially today, that they are fearful that Barack Obama may not be much different than John McCain and George W. Bush, and that may be a little bit far-fetched, but Barack Obama did today talk about direct and aggressive diplomacy, and diplomacy is usually not a word that comes out of the White House. Usually you hear from the White House that all options are on the table, things like that. Barack Obama has not talked about a missile shield like John McCain did today. He talked about diplomacy.
One more quick question for you, Ken. There's a group out there that wants the Senate Democratic Steering and Outreach Committee to take away Senator Joe Lieberman's rank and committee chairmanship. Of course, Joe Lieberman is still ostensibly a Democrat, but a Democrat who's supporting John McCain. The Democrats, though, are in a bit of a bind right now until after the election. If they take away, well, you tell them.
Well, exactly right. Right now, the Senate is 51 Democrats, 49 Republicans. Even though Joe Lieberman was elected as an independent because he had lost the Democratic primary, he considers himself an independent Democrat. But if he was no longer able to caucus with the Democrats, and let's just say he became a Republican, then it would be a 50-50 Senate, and Dick Cheney would break the tie, and the Republicans would control the Senate. So for all, there's a lot of people who don't like Joe Lieberman. He's endorsed John McCain. He's endorsed the Bush war policy. He's criticized Barack Obama on defense and things like that. But to do that now, before the election, makes absolutely no sense. It would be crazy for the Democrats. But the Democrats look likely to gain 4 or 5 Senate seats next year. Perhaps it'll come back next year.
You mean if they've got a comfortable majority,
absolutely,
they can afford to cut Joe Lieberman loose.
They may not need him, right.
Ken Rudin, thanks very much. Ken will be back next Wednesday with Neil Conan, who will be back next week. Ken's Political Junkie column is up on NPR.org. And just a reminder, tomorrow we have the military and the movies. I'm Ted Koppel. Thanks for listening. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.